On this week's Arundoxis Research Roundup, I'm really pleased to be joined by Anne Osterreider from Oxford Brookes University. And we're going to be talking about a paper just published in the Journal of Experimental Botany, and the title of which is Stacks Off Tracks, a role for the Golgin AT CASP in plant endoplasmic reticulum Golgi apparatus tethering. So, a bit of a mouthful there. And looking through the paper, it's definitely one which involves a lot of time in front of the confocal, I think. So, Anne, thanks very much for joining us, and it would be great if you give us an overview of this paper, please.
Hello, Geraint. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited. It's the first YouTube chat Skype interview that I'm doing that's recorded, and I'm really hoping that there will be no awkward building site noises in the background. So the paper that we just published that together with my colleagues at Brookes, Imogen Sparks and Chris Hawes, Irma has now left and has gone off to be her own group leader. Mm-hmm. It's with colleagues in Wageningen, Thijs Ketteler, Norbert de Ruiter, which is where we use the optical laser tweezer system, and Stan Botchway and Andy Ward at the Central Laser Facility in Harwell near Oxford. Mm-hmm. So we were interested in the relationship between plant Golgi bodies and the endoplasmic reticulum, and specifically at the so-called ER exit sites, which are specialized domains in the ER where protein export from the ER is occurring and protein import into the surface of the Golgi. Now we know some things about this interface, but there's quite a lot that we don't know yet. So previous studies have found out that plant Golgi bodies, and in contrast to mammalian cells, plants have several, up to hundreds, mobile Golgi bodies, and they move through the cell together with these ER exit sites over the surface of the ER. So one of the questions that Immo and Chris addressed previously was, is there a physical connection between the two, or how are these two organelles held together? Okay. And in our paper, we made a follow-up of that, and we studied a protein called AT-CASP, which is a member of the Golgi family, and we looked at mutants of that. And for both cases, so in Immo's and Chris's papers and in this paper, we used a technique called optical tweezers to directly probe that ER-Golgi interface.
Okay, I see. So, yeah, I think there's some controversy in the field, as we discussed just before we started recording, that where does the ER end and where does the Golgi begin? And so I guess that's one of the questions you're attempting to answer in this paper. Is that right?
I don't think it's the main question, but it's a direct result from that. So,
okay.
So really that work started during my PhD, which I did with Chris Hawes, where we looked at the mammalian Golgi, and in the mammalian Golgi, there's controversy as well. Is the Golgi apparatus an independent, distinct organelle, or does it originate and indeed go back to the ER during mitosis, for example? And the answer really is it depends on what markers you use. And that's what I found out in my PhD, that membrane markers behave very differently from other proteins, which might or might not be more structural. So the answer, if where the R finishes and the Golgi ends, is we're more sure about the kind of medial trans-Golgi body where that finishes. We're not quite sure about the relationship of the cis-Golgi and the R exit sites. And indeed, it seems like there might be some kind of Golgi platform or Golgi proto-cis-Golgi that probably has a very close relationship to the R, if not, is embedded in the R exit sites.
Okay.
But it depends on the markers you're looking at, basically.
Okay. So somewhat of a continuum between the two in some ways, perhaps, yeah.
That definitely, and that's what makes it really hard to try and isolate Golgi bodies from plants, for example, because you always get a certain amount of contamination from the R membranes because of that quite intimate relationship between the two.
Okay, so in this paper, there's a lot of really nice images, you know, where you're looking at the two, the interface between the two. And you mentioned in your introduction that you're using an optical tweezers effect. So can you give a little description on that, what that technique is? Because I'm sure many people won't be so familiar with it.
Yes, sure. It's a technique that I think traditionally has been used to study things like viscosity of fluids by trapping objects like microbeads or particles. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is there's quite a lot of physics and vectors and forces involved, and I can't certainly explain all of that in detail.
Right.
But basically you've got a very strong focused laser beam. So we use, I think it's 1050 nanometers. And if you've got an object that's got a diameter of about 1 micrometer and its refractive index is different from its surroundings, then you can physically trap that particle within your focused laser beam.
Okay.
Now, we're lucky that organelles like plant Golgi bodies, but also peroxisomes and mitochondria, which is some of the work that IMO is doing now, that they have the right size to be trapped in that laser beam, and also that their refractive index is different to the cytoplasm because they are quite dense, they've got the membranes, and they've got probably the contents in them. Whereas it's not possible, or we didn't manage to physically trap the ER. So that isn't that distinct particle body, and it's not different enough in its refractive index from the cytoplasm, which is a bit annoying for people who research the ER, but it's quite handy for us researching Golgi bodies because that's one argument we can make to referees when they ask, well, how sure are you that you're trapping the Golgi, not the ER? We can say, yes, we did these control experiments, and we are quite certain, obviously depending what your definition of Golgi and the ER is, with that caveat.
Yeah, the initial caveats, absolutely. I see. So I assume that in work which is moving forward from this, you're using the same technique, and can you maybe give us a clue about what work you're doing to carry on the work in this paper?
So in the paper that just came out, we were looking at ATCAS, which is a tethering factor in Arabidopsis.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to a family called Golgenes, and there are about 68 Golgene homologues in plants.
Okay.
So initially, they were discovered in animal cells, and the characteristic things about them are they've got this very long coil domain that looks a bit like a rope with intertwined helices, and that can reach into the cytoplasm to capture vesicles, membrane carriers, to tether membranes to other membranes, and so on. So the targeting of these at the cis Golgi seems to be via a transmembrane domain at the C-terminus. So you've got the proteins that are ATCAS, and there are two other ones, Golgene 84A and B, that traffic through the R, they insert into the Golgi membrane, and then they reach out into the cytoplasm or with ATCAS towards the R or Golgi interface. The other proteins at the trans-Golgi apparatus, they reach the location by interaction with small GDPases, so they're coming from the cytoplasm on the Golgi membrane and back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've got quite different functions. Sean Mondo and his group have shown that the Golgenes can capture very specifically different cargo, and that's an immediate experiment that you can try and see what happens if you remove these called coil domains where they interact with other membranes. Maybe what happens if you do a domain swap? Would that still work? What happens if you swap the coil domains? And indeed, that's a great experiment that again, Sean Mundo and his group did. They took the coil domains of Golgenes and they attached them to a mitochondrial localization signal. So they had the coil domains embedded in mitochondria. And with that, they managed to redirect the vesicular traffic from the Golgi R interface to the mitochondria. And by that, they were able to very specifically analyze which domains grabbed which cargo.
Okay.
And I thought it's one of these experiments that you see and you think that's so elegant and so obvious. Why didn't I think of it? So yeah, Jean Manuel is one of my Golgi heroes, I guess.
Right.
So something like that would be interesting to see. Can we I guess synthetically find out what these proteins bind to and what kind of cargo they direct.
I see. And it's worth saying that within this paper, you both look at the full-length Cas protein and also a Cas protein which has this col domain deleted. So and you see clear differences between those two proteins. Okay, so I think that's really great. So thanks very much, Anne, for joining us today. And I should, of course, add that Anne is also, as well as doing original research there, she also has a significant science communication component to her lectureship at Oxford Brookes. She's very active on Twitter, so if you want to follow her, which I'm sure you already do if you're listening to this, she's at Anne Osterreider. Thank you very much, Anne, for talking to us today, and we look forward to hearing your outputs, both from science communication and also, obviously, your scientific outputs as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.